We're in the book of Exodus, chapter 20. As we go make our way through the Ten Commandments, we're on the second part of the fourth commandment. And for our catechism, we're going to read together just the fourth commandment. I think we have it up here, so I'll read it and you respond with me. What is the fourth commandment? The fourth commandment is, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, nor thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord kept the seventh day and hallowed it. What does the fourth commandment teach us? To keep the Sabbath holy. All right, that is our text this morning as well, so we'll let that be our reading of the text. As we go through the Ten Commandments, if you come to hear the Ten Commandments and hope, and you're looking for us to give you a nice, clean box that houses everything you need to do to keep these Ten Commandments, you come hoping for a list of things that you could do or not do that would guarantee that you would keep these commandments, I hope that you're disappointed. Because I hope that's not what we give you. There are more to the Ten Commandments than meets the eye. Jesus showed us that in the Sermon on the Mount in the book of Matthew. And as we go through these, if that's what you're wanting, I hope you don't get it. And we've only done three commandments so far, and probably the one that you would tend to think you might have received that was on 2 weeks ago when we did the third commandment, taking God's name in vain. And if you came away from that message thinking that John gave you a list of things you can say and things you cannot say and things you can do and things you cannot do, either you misunderstood me or I didn't make myself clear. That's not what the point was. The point was this, that I want to love God so much that I am compelled in my spirit to take great care to do whatever is necessary to make sure that I don't blaspheme His name. And that's not black and white. You can't put that in a box and sell it. Now the Sabbath is in a similar fashion. Last week we talked about calendars, and some of you, how can I say this tactfully, thought I went astray out in left field and never got back, okay? But that's not the case. You need to go back and listen to the sermon again, all right? Okay? Because that's not where we were at. I made a point. And the point was this, that we are using today the Gregorian calendar. And I brought one every year. I make one for my personal use that has every month on it, just this size, so I can look ahead. And I have one part of my home decor is have these stuck around on the walls, you know. Not upstairs where Susan patrols, but downstairs. All right, if you want to look at this, you know what a calendar looks like, but this has got also the moon. The four phases of the moon are four phases of the moon that tells what day they're on. And the point I made last week is we use the Gregorian calendar, which has 365 and a quarter days approximately, and those things are adjusted to fix time very precisely. Overlaid in this 365 and a quarter days are 12 months that roughly follow the length of a lunar month, but they're not exact. And so the moon, the phases of the moon shift through our calendar. You can see that on this right here, that see what days the new moon comes on every month, and you can see that it flows through the calendar, not as like the months flow. And interlaid in that as well is a seven-day week. And a seven-day week that's a continuous week that flows. Now, last week I talked about how this is the precision of it, what we use has not always been around. When Jesus walked the earth, the Romans had what they called a Julian calendar that had 8 days. As a matter of fact, most of the New Testament narrative, as you read it, and it talks about the first day of the week, that probably is looking at a Julian calendar that had 8 days in a week. And the point that I made was that if you, in trying to figure out this question about the Sabbath, think that it's absolutely necessary to get the right day, you're going to be disappointed. Because you can't prove it. If you want to believe, and a lot of people want to, and I'm not knocking this, but if you want to believe that our Saturday is a multiple of seven from the day that God rested from his creation, that's okay, but you can't prove it. You've got to take it by faith. You've got a 1 in 7 chance of being right. Of course, if God makes it so, there's no chance at all. And we might take that by faith. But that's one question that a lot of people struggle with. And we want to talk about that to begin with. This morning, we're going to go on to two different groups of people. You see on your outline, I've got this sentence, the English word Sabbath is a transliteration of the Hebrew word Sabbath. Transliteration just means it takes the letters of the Hebrew word and make an English word out of it. And they do that a lot of times because there's no English equivalent. Baptize is a word that's that way in the Greek. But that's where our Sabbath is at. And when we read in the Old Testament, for instance, back in Exodus 16, I believe, that we've looked at before, where Moses tells the people to keep, we're going across the wilderness here, and we're going to keep this day as a Sabbath, I think the children of Israel heard something different than we hear. When I hear the word Sabbath, I'm hearing a religious word. What they heard, perhaps at all, at the most, was this day is going to be a day of rest. If you were a pioneer traveling across the United States in a wagon train, and the wagon master says, today is going to be a day of rest, do you think of worship? No, you think, I'm going to stop and rest from this journey that we're on. And so I think when we look at this word, the Hebrews may have heard something a little different than what we hear. Now, not all the time. As time went on through the Old Testament, they didn't. But that's one thing. I want to define a couple of terms. Sabbatarian. Here's my definition of Sabbatarian. Some of you may object to my broadness of it. But here is the definition. You see it on your outline. One who holds the view that the biblical Sabbath remains in effect and should be observed on the seventh day of the week. That's a Sabbatarian. One who holds the view that the biblical Sabbath remains in effect and should be observed on the seventh day of the week. I'm going to paint you two extremes. of people who would be found in this group of Sabbatarians. One is what I call Kool-Aid cults. And you know where the word Kool-Aid is coming from, Jim Jones. Type people who are authoritative, very authoritative. And their followers hang on to their every word, mostly out of fear and blind devotion. And there are some Sabbatarians who follow the seventh day and follow the Sabbath because their leader is this type of leader. And he's got everything figured out. He has all the dates, all the numbers figured out. He knows all the answers. And anyone who disagrees with him is labeled a blasphemer. Now, you might object to that extreme, but they still fall into that camp. On the other extreme of the Sabbatarian would be perhaps what is known as Seventh-day Baptist. Seventh-day Baptists are pretty much like any other typical traditional Baptist group. They just worship on Saturday rather than Sunday. They would call us, of course there are always exceptions in every group, they would look to us as Christian brothers, just mistaken on this idea of the Sabbath. So you got those two extremes of Sabbatarians, and lots of stuff is in there in the middle. Okay, you got the Seventh-day Adventists, they're in there. I think the Worldwide Church of God, anybody remember Herbert W. Armstrong? I think he's dead and gone by now. I think they worshiped on the Sabbath, the seventh day. Garner Ted, his son, and other groups. That's the Sabbatarian. A non-Sabbatarian is this definition: one who holds that the moral obligation to observe the Sabbath on the seventh day has been abolished by the substitutionary death of Christ. Non-Sabbatarian, one who says that the obligation to observe the Sabbath on the seventh day has been abolished by the work of Christ. On one end of this extreme might be those who say that the seventh day has been replaced by the first day, and we are under obligation to keep a first day Sabbath. Okay? There's not a whole lot of difference between them and the liberal Sabbatarians. Okay? But that's kind of one extreme. On the other extreme would be those who believe that every day is the same, and for all practical purposes, there is no reason for any distinction of a seven-day week. Okay, so there's our definitions. Lots of space in the middle there for somebody to hold to non-Sabbatarian views and not be on the extremes of that. Okay, you notice the outline is 6 pages long, didn't you? Okay, I promise to be through by, leave off the word promise, okay? I'll be through at a regular time. Which day? We may skip some of the stuff. I've written it out fully so you can just read it and understand it. If you think I'm starting to get off on a tangent, somebody raise your hand and do like this. Like, come on, come on. Okay? I may skip some of it. Okay, we're going to look at the Sabbatarian teaching first. See the left column, the Sabbatarian teaching. All of these things I have written down here do not fit every Sabbatarian. We said it's a broad brush. But in general, a lot of them hold these teachings. These statements come from their teachings. Okay, the middle column may have a reference, and over on the right side is my comments. My comments are certainly not inspired by God. All right, hopefully they're thought through. Hopefully the Lord may lead me, but I'm not claiming this is God's word. Okay, so let's begin. Number one, the beginning of the Sabbath, here's Sabbatarian teaching. The beginning of the Sabbath is a creation ordinance. This may bolster the claims of later laws or traditions. You see that in Genesis chapter 2, verses 2 and 3. We're not going to read every text that you see there, but I'm going to read this one. Here's what it says. And on the seventh day, pay attention to what it says. Pay attention to what it doesn't say. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had done. And he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made. That's all it says. Okay? But that verse is referred back to a number of times in the Old Testament and New Testament, and the fact that it is referenced back gives it some measure of authority. Okay, that's called a creation ordinance. The Sabbatarians acknowledge that, and I agree with them. That is the case. Number two, the weekly cycle of a seventh-day Sabbath began at creation and is a universally moral obligation to all men, with the same reference. Now notice my comments. This text that I just read says nothing about extending the sanctification of the seventh day of creation beyond that one day. Okay? We take what we know to the other facts that we know to be true and read them back into that text. But that text does not say God sanctified every seventh day after that. He may have, but that text doesn't say that. He sanctified that seventh day that he's talking about. We know we can say that. To go beyond that, we've got to be careful. God, and here's the thing that you got to remember. God also instituted marriage there. And he gave a command regarding marriage. He commanded nothing about the Sabbath. He didn't tell anybody to remember anything there about the Sabbath. Right? But he did command something about marriage. He commanded them to reproduce and multiply on the earth. Do we think it is a sin for a married couple not to have children? No, we don't. And yet God commanded that. He doesn't command in these verses for us to keep the Sabbath, and yet Sabbatarians want to hang on to that verse saying he does. But he doesn't. Somebody do this. We've got to move on. Number three, nowhere does the Bible command us to observe any weekly day other than the Sabbath. And that's true. But it doesn't, just because something's not commanded, doesn't mean it's forbidden. Number four on the second page there, back of that page. Nowhere in the New Testament does it explicitly state that God changed the seventh day to another day. And I agree with that. Nowhere does the New Testament explicitly say God changed the day. But that doesn't mean that the seventh day is still binding. I'm trying to prove too much by that statement. Number five. The fulfillment of Daniel's prophecy is that the little horn would change the times and the law, and that's a reference to changing the Sabbath, Daniel 7:25. That's a huge stretch. A huge stretch. And it is very risky to be using prophecy to build the doctrine of your church, or your own personal doctrine, off of a vague prophecy. Okay? Number six. The failure to observe the seventh day and use another one is the sign of the Son of Man, 2 Thessalonians 2:4. Same issue right there. That verse says nothing about the Sabbath. Number seven, Sabbath keeping will be a test of loyalty at the second coming of Christ, only if it's still binding. And there again, that verse does not, verses do not say anything about the Sabbath. It talks about people who do not keep the commandments of God, which might include the Sabbath, and it might will include a host of other things. Number eight, the Sabbatarians teach this, that there is an unbroken line of God-fearing men who kept the Sabbath day Sabbath from its inception till the time of Christ. Look at my comments there. There's no record of anyone in the Bible keeping a Sabbath until Exodus chapter 16. We don't know that Adam and Eve kept the Sabbath. We don't know that. Nowhere in the Bible does it tell us they did. We don't know about Abraham. We don't know about Jacob. We don't know about Isaac. We don't know about Noah. We don't know about Enoch. We don't know about Methuselah. We know of no one between creation and Exodus chapter 16 whether they kept the Sabbath or not, because the Sabbath is not mentioned. This is an argument from silence. Just because it doesn't say someone broke it doesn't mean they kept it. In fact, it doesn't mean it's there at all. Furthermore, in the book of, I think it may be Daniel, probably not Daniel, but in the latter part of the Old Testament, part of the reason for a 70-year captivity, the Bible tells us, was to redeem these Sabbaths that had been unkept. So it looks to me like there was a broken line of Sabbaths kept or not kept. Number nine, the Sabbatarians teach that Jesus and his disciples kept the Sabbath prior to his death, and his disciples continue to keep it after the ascension. You see four or five verses there from the book of Acts. Everybody agrees that Jesus kept the Sabbath before his crucifixion and before his resurrection. All of the cases that are listed here in the book of Acts are where Jews are coming together to worship on their Sabbath just like they always have. And Paul, some of the time, comes in there with them. That does not necessarily mean that he's doing so out of obligation. It very well could mean, and I believe it, this is the fact, the case, that Paul expects the Jews to be the most likely candidates that would understand the fulfillment of the coming of the Messiah. They have all the foundation, they have all the background necessary to understand that Jesus would be the Messiah. So he goes there first because they're his people and because they have the necessary foundational teaching to start grasping what he's saying. It's just a reasonable expectation that he would go there. Number 10, the fact that Sunday worship was not prevalent until the middle of the second century indicates that it is wrong. No, it doesn't. It just doesn't. It doesn't matter how big a gap there is, it doesn't prove anything. Number 11, Jesus warned his disciples to pray that their flight would not be in winter or on the Sabbath when escaping coming persecution. So they must have been keeping the Sabbath, Matthew 24. Not necessarily. It might imply that somebody was keeping the Sabbath. And if this prophecy was fulfilled in 70 AD with the destruction of Jerusalem by Titus, Sabbath worship perhaps was still in play. If it is a coming thing that is even yet to be fulfilled, it perhaps will be that there will be a time where a lot of people believe that Sabbath worship in Jerusalem will be reinstituted. Maybe so, maybe not. But it doesn't mean, and it doesn't prove, that we are still under that obligation today. Number 12, God's people will always worship on the Sabbath for eternity. You see, verses in Isaiah and Revelation. In these verses, you will see also that the Apostle John says there's no night there. There's no need for the sun. There's no need for the moon. So if there's going to be this designation between one day and another to count 7 days for our weeks, there's got to be some other method of doing it besides what we use today, because the prophecy also says there's no moon, no day, no night, or no night there. Are we moving on? Boy, I feel like I'm running. Number 13, it is highly unlikely that 9 out of 10 commandments are still valid, but one is not. All right, this is a statement from the Sabbatarians. And that bothers me. It seems unlikely to me too that you've got 10 commandments and all of a sudden we're going to jerk one out and say that it's not valid. That bothers me as well. All right, but there again, doesn't mean it's not so. Number 14. God said that the Sabbath was an everlasting sign between him and his people and linked it to creation. And I'm going to read this verse in Exodus chapter 31, verses 13 to 17. To me, this is the strongest argument for keeping the Sabbath, or a Sabbath of some kind. Exodus 31, verse 13, the Lord spoke to Moses saying this. He says, "Speak also to the children of Israel, saying, surely my Sabbaths, plural, you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you." Those are some significant words. God said, you'll keep my Sabbaths because they are a sign between me and you. You know what signs do? They signify something. It's a sign between me and you so that, what does he say? You may know that I am the Lord, I am the one who sanctified you, who set you apart. Verse 14, you shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy to you. Everyone who profanes it shall be surely put to death, for whoever does any work on it, that person shall be cut off from his people. Work shall be done for 6 days, but the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. Therefore, the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath through the generations as a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever, because God, in 6 days, made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. So there, it links back to creation. Those thoughts, to me, are important. The fact that it's a sign, the fact that you may know, it's a sign that helps you to know something, and this link to creation. So there are 14 statements that Sabbatarians use to bolster their belief that the seventh-day Sabbath is still binding upon the Christian church today. Of those 14, that last one is important to me. I think that's something to be considered, as well as the first one and a couple of others I agreed with, but they're kind of minor things. Now let's look at the non-Sabbatarian teaching. And here again, if you consider yourself a non-Sabbatarian, you may look at some of these things that I'm going to say and say, hey, I don't believe that. I'm a non-Sabbatarian. I don't believe that. We're painting with a broad brush. There are a lot of people in this group of non-Sabbatarians. Every statement may not fit you. But as a general rule, this is a non-Sabbatarian teaching. Number 16, as it is in here. There is no record of anyone keeping the Sabbath prior to the Exodus. There's not one reference of a seven-day period used as a week prior to the Exodus. The word Sabbath does not appear prior to the book of Exodus. The word week is used twice, but as a seven-year period. That's when Jacob was working for his wives, Rachel and Leah. It says when he had fulfilled her week. We understand that to be a seven-year period. Actually, the Hebrew word week means something that is seventhed. Catch all those ths and does in there? Something that is divided into seven parts. When we use the term a 10-day weak. That's really a contradiction. That's like saying a six-sided octagon. Right? A weak, by definition, is a seven-period thing. And when we classify it as a 10-day something, we're contradicting it. But we know what we're talking about. We're talking about this period of time, whether it's divided into 10 or 8 or 5 or whatever, or 7. But technically, by definition, weak means 7. Okay. So, there's no record of anybody keeping the Sabbath prior to Exodus. There's not one reference to a 7-day period used as a week prior to the Exodus. The word Sabbath does not appear prior to the book of Exodus. So what can we conclude from that? Not much. Okay, my comments are these. While it is a significant amount of time, 2,500 years, that's a significant amount of time, that nothing is mentioned of this, that something that's so important is not mentioned, but still, this is an argument from silence. It does not say either way. The fact that there is no record is not proof that there wasn't. It wasn't practiced. Number 17. There is no universal moral obligation in Genesis 2 to keep the Sabbath. We read those verses, Genesis 2, 2, and 3. I agree. In those verses, there is no universal moral obligation to keep the Sabbath. It's just a record of God sanctifying that day at the most, or at the most in that text. Number 18. While the Jews continued to keep the Sabbath after the resurrection, there's no biblical evidence that the Christians kept it out of moral obligation. And we talked about this earlier. We see Paul going into the Jewish temples on the Sabbath to talk to the Jews, but it doesn't necessarily mean that he was doing it out of moral obligation. The text, the New Testament text, never tells us that the Sabbath is a moral obligation for New Testament believers to keep. Number 19, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. We see this in Mark chapter 2, verse 27, where the Pharisees were getting on to Jesus because the disciples, I think the context was, had walked through a field and picked some corn to eat on the Sabbath, and they were giving him down the road about it. And Jesus makes this comment in his discussion with the Pharisees. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And I'm not sure what all that means. But one thing I do think it means is that the Sabbath is for our good. Not we are the Sabbath's servant. And sometimes I think some of these very stringent groups makes me feel like, and I believe it makes their people feel like, that they are serving the Sabbath rather than the other way around. Again, this text doesn't prove anything, but it is significant in its spirit. Number 20, the New Testament gives examples of meetings of worship and or Sabbath keeping on the first day of the week. And you see a couple listed right there. My comments are these. You should be very cautious about building doctrine off of historical narrative. We can see examples of the early New Testament church doing a lot of things in the book of Acts. It is not proper biblical interpretation for us to take the examples of things that they did and make doctrine for ourselves out of it. What we should be looking for is teaching, instruction about do this, this is what this means, and build our doctrine off of the teaching portions of the New Testament, where the Apostle Paul usually would be the main one, teaches us about the church and about our following of Christ. Just because they met on the first day of the week doesn't mean that that's, we have two examples of them meeting on the first day of the week. That doesn't mean that that's their normal meeting time. There may be other reasons they met on the first day of the week in that particular instance. Maybe not. But let's not be guilty of saying the New Testament tells us to meet on the first day of the week. It doesn't. It may give us two examples of they did it on two particular times, but that doesn't mean it is a pattern. It does surely doesn't mean it's an obligatory pattern for us to follow. Number 21, first day Sabbaths began fairly early in the New Church, New Testament Church, and fairly early were understood to be commemorating the resurrection of Christ. And I assume that's true. I'll take somebody else's word for that, that's the way it was. But long-standing traditions prove nothing. They give weight, they are important, but they are not weightier than the biblical text. Number 22. The Lord's Day, non-Sabbatarians generally teach this, that the Lord's Day is the new first day Sabbath. This is in Revelation 1:10. And let me read that one right quick. Revelation 1:10 says this, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day, and I heard behind me a loud voice as of a trumpet. That's all that's there. This verse does not say this is the first day of the week. It just says, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day. Where do we get the idea that the Lord's Day is the first day of the week? I don't know, but I'll tell you where we don't get it. We don't get it from Revelation 1:10. And we don't get it from any other verse in the New Testament. It came, I suppose, from tradition. And that's okay. But it's easy for us to forget where we get stuff. It's easy for us to forget that this idea that the Lord's Day is the first day of the week doesn't come from the Bible. It comes from practice of Christianity over the years. In fact, the Sabbatarians, you know what they say about this verse? The Sabbatarians say that this, he was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day. They say this phrase, the Lord's Day, is a reference, a very clear reference to the Sabbath, the seventh day, because God said that the Sabbath is my day. And this is the Lord's Day. I'll tell you, if we're looking at the biblical text, they have more grounds to stand on there than the non-Sabbatarians. But it is, in our day, a common practice to refer to Sunday or the first day of the week as the Lord's Day. And I ain't saying that's wrong. I'm just saying we don't get it from the Bible. We get it from tradition. We get it from something that is passed down. Number 23. God at times changes his commands. That doesn't seem right, does it? Okay, God changes mine. It doesn't say he changes mine, it says he changes his commands. That is, his instructions for this particular time may be this, and for another particular time it may be that. He changes his commands about a particular thing. The most obvious example of that is eating meat. I think we would all assume, although what the text doesn't tell us this either, that Adam and Eve originally, before the fall, were vegetarians. I don't think they ate meat. Before the fall, there was no death, killing of animals. So originally they were vegetarians, perhaps. After the fall and prior to or around the time of the flood, in fact, I think it's right after the flood, God tells them every living thing that crawls upon the earth is to you for food. So what diet does God give them there? Whatever you want. They knew the difference between clean and unclean animals to some extent because Noah was designated to take animals on the ark that way, right? But God told them everything for you is to eat. You get to the book of Exodus, and he changes that. He restricts their diet around these ideas of clean and unclean animals. You get to the book, the New Testament, book of Acts, and he changes it again. That those restrictions he put in Exodus are lifted. He goes to great lengths to have to show this to Peter. Peter has to go to great lengths to explain it to the other apostles and disciples. So that's an example of how things are changed. God can change commands. Perhaps the Sabbath is another example of that. Number 24, Paul appeals to our liberty to observe holy days as a matter of conscience, not obligation to the fourth commandment. Now, the next three or four things here are passages from the New Testament that you will scarcely find in Sabbatarian teaching literature. They tend to explain the things that back up their points and ignore things that tend to contradict them. And what I'm going to do in the next three or four is look at what it says, look how non-Sabbatarians accept this, and show you how Sabbatarians try to explain it away, perhaps, is the word I might use at the moment. Romans chapter 14. Paul makes this statement. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but he's talking about two things, food and drink and days. He makes this comment. One man esteems one day above another. And another man esteems every day alike. He says, one man esteems the one man that esteems a certain day, he does so out of a desire to honor God. And the man who esteems not that day, he does so with a desire to honor God. And Paul says, let every man be persuaded in his own mind. If the Sabbath were binding upon us, I would not expect Paul to say that. I just wouldn't. The perfect opportunity for him to hone in on this and tell us what the clear answer is, he doesn't do it. Now, I'll tell you another thing about this verse. We read this, but we hear something else. Here's what we hear. One man esteems one day above another. Another man esteems a different day above another. That's not what it says, is it? One man esteems one day above another. Another man esteems every day the same. Catch that? Every day the same. Let every man be persuaded in his own mind. The Sabbatarians, in trying to explain this passage, say, well, he's talking about not the Jewish Sabbath, but these pagan Sabbaths. These people who are coming out of pagan feast days. I may use the word feast days rather than Sabbath. These Gentiles are coming out of pagan worship. And they've been worshiping these perverse Roman gods, and they're clinging on to these feast days, wanting to keep them. And Paul is telling them, don't do it. It's like an idol means nothing. you know, don't do it. It's no big deal. It's nothing. But that's not the thing. That to me does not make sense. And here's why. These people we see over and over in the New Testament, when they come out of these pagan, Roman feasts and temples in Ephesus, in Rome, wherever, they are not wanting to hang on to that. They are fiercely trying to separate themselves from this perversion as far as they can get it. It is highly unlikely they're trying to hang on to these things. It seems very clear to me that the issue here is not pagan feast days, but Jewish feast days that he's talking about. Number 25. The non-Sabbatarian would tell us that Paul devotes the entire book of Galatians refuting those who have come into the new church at Galatia and tried to place it under obligation to keep the Jewish law. In Galatians, the whole book, the theme of the whole book is that we are free from the law. Do not let somebody place you back under the law. And it's the Jewish law that he has in mind. And in chapter 4, verse 10, he mentions things, four periods of time that these Judaizers were trying to put them back under. He mentions days, he mentions months, he mentions years, and he mentions seasons. If this is not, it doesn't specifically say the word Sabbath, but I can't imagine what else he would be talking about. I don't see any other options. Number 26, Colossians 2, 11 through 17. And I want to read this text. Colossians 2, 11 through 17. Now this is one of them texts that your kind of eyes kind of start glazing over, you know, when you're listening to it read. Paul says, in him, or in Christ, you were also circumcised with the circumcision made without hands, by putting off the body of the sins of the flesh by the circumcision of Christ. Here he makes the point that the sign of circumcision is a spiritual sign of the circumcision of your heart. Verse 12, buried with him in baptism, in which you also were raised with him through faith in the working of God who raised him from the dead. And you being dead in your trespasses and the uncircumcision of your flesh, he is made alive together with him, having forgiven you all trespasses. Listen now, having wiped out the handwriting of requirements that was against us, which was contrary to us, and he has taken it out of the way, having nailed it to the cross. Having disarmed principalities and powers, he made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them in it. So, verse 16, as a result of what he just said, so let no one judge you in food or in drink or regarding a festival or a new moon or Sabbaths. That's pretty clear. I can't explain that away. Verse 17, which are these things are a shadow of things to come, but the substance is of Christ. He says, these things are a shadow. These things are a sign. And the thing that they are signifying is Jesus Christ. This passage, for me, is the nail in the coffin. The Sabbath, which means rest, is a sign of rest between God and His people. In some way, Jesus Christ cast a shadow back in time 1,500 years at least, showing us a sign of a Sabbath or a rest that is to come or that can come to you. What is it about Christ that signifies a Sabbath. It is this word, rest. Rest. As a Christian, I rest from my efforts to earn my salvation. As a Christian, I rest from the penalty of the law. As a Christian, I rest from the condemnation of the law. As a Christian, I rest from the demands of the law that I can never keep. Rest. The Sabbath signified rest. That's what the word means. This is my rest. Number 27. Now, let me back up. The Sabbatarians, in explaining this verse away, do it this way. They say that he did away with the particulars of the Sabbath keeping, not the day. In other words, he did away with it. They're not talking about things the Pharisees added. They're saying he did away with don't pick up sticks on Saturday, don't go out of your house on Saturday, don't do this on Saturday, don't do that on Saturday, the things that God told them. Those are the things that's been abolished, but the actual day has not. The problem with that is that if you have a day that you're supposed to keep, but you have nothing to keep it with, what are you left with? Nothing. If there is a Sabbath, what is it a Sabbath for? You can't separate those things. Yeah, that's what they attempt to do. Number 27, the writer of Hebrews mentions the betrayal of the sojourn in the wilderness as a journey that ends by entering to God's rest. And he links this to the seventh day creation. And I'm not going to elaborate on that. You see, I've got the text there. But when the children of Israel were in the wilderness, there were two things that this text in Hebrews tells us that kept them from entering God's rest. One was looking back at Egypt and wanting to go back there. In other words, wanting the pleasures of sin will keep you from entering into God's rest. That was one thing. They told them in the book of Hebrews, and we saw we see in the wilderness. The second thing was this, that would keep us from entering into God's rest is believing and not accepting the fact and not trusting in the fact that God can take care of it. Thinking that I've got to labor, I've got to do something that will cause me to enter into this rest. As long as we think we've got to do something to help God save us, we'll not enter into rest. Number 28. The sign of the Sabbath, though not required to be the seventh day, is an important sign that reminds us of our rest in Christ's finished work on the cross. This is the spirit of the fourth commandment that God wants us to remember. To me, this is a powerful sign. Number 29, 30, and let's read 31. The fourth commandment is the only commandment of the ten. This is the non-Sabbatarian teaching. The fourth commandment is the only commandment of the ten not repeated as binding to the church in the New Testament. It has been abolished. Perhaps, is my comments. Maybe there's a better word than abolished. For me, explaining that in terms of the fourth commandment, still in my own study, is more gray than black and white. The back page, I'm going to run through 17 statements just because this is from my heart. You see how I explain that? Thoughts from my maybe misinformed conscience. Okay, we all have a conscience that has taught us things about the Sabbath, and my somewhat depraved mind. Here are the comments. I like the idea that the world can't get rid of a seven-day week. I like that. I'm not saying that's holy, but I like it. Number two, I like the fact that God-hating atheists have to use something that God instituted and told us about in the book of Genesis that they proclaim to be a myth, that they have to use it. I like that. Again, that's probably not holy. Number three, I believe there are physical benefits to proportionate times of rest that a seven-day week gives me. Number four, I believe that the benefits of a seven-day week with a one-day rest demonstrates the immeasurable wisdom of God. Number five, I suspect that this 1-in-7 ratio is good for the earth as well in many ways. I grew up in southeast Arkansas where you just flat land, you see nothing but farms. And they went through a phase of skip row planting. Now, skip row planting nowadays is defined as has something to do with corn-fed stuff, usually where they're raising corn, I believe. But I remember something about, as a kid, it was letting some of the land lay to rest. Okay? So this application of letting the land have a Sabbath is found in a lot of cultures. Okay, number six. I remember a time, day and time, only 50 years ago, when the streets were empty on Sunday. Not even one gas station was open. If somebody needed gas, somebody would go and open the store to get you gas. There were no convenience stores, no Walmarts, no Lowe's, no open restaurants. It was a ghost town on Sundays. I remember those days. I remember this thing called Blue Laws. Susan reminded me on the way to church that in Magic Mart, which is where Fred's is now, I think Magic Mart was the first store that was there, is that right? She worked there for a month or two. She was pregnant with Mark. They would, on Sundays, there would be different parts of the store you could not go in because it was unlawful for them to sell those types of things on Sunday. Those are blue laws. I believe that I am being inoculated into a world where there is no distinction between the, quote, Sabbath and any other day. I believe that I willingly participate in this inoculation. I want to worship God every day and in everything. I want to make it a priority to set aside 1 day in 7 to rest my body and to nourish my soul. I want to make it a priority to value the enrichment that comes to me as we rejoice together in this place in our rest. And I don't want to end up making my priorities a law for you. I want the sign of the Sabbath to be made known to the world. I want to see desperate people embrace the rest of the Sabbath and the Lord of the Sabbath. I want to continually and enthusiastically worship the God who has given me this Sabbath rest. I want to remember the Sabbath, making it a holy thing. Those thoughts are not black and white. The edges are fuzzy. I suspect that's the way they ought to be. Let's pray. God, thank you for your word. God, pierce our hearts with the application that you want us to have. God, I'm not saying that your word can mean different things. God, you know where we're at. You know our thoughts. You know what we believe. Would you conform us, not to one another, but to you? Amen.